Today I'm speaking to a new friend. Her name is Vanessa, and she is tragically well-versed in the language of assault and legal protocol for people who bring forth claims. I'll repeat this at the end of the episode, but if anyone out there needs help or has questions about what's happening to them, please call the National Assault Telephone Hotline at 800-656-HOPE. If you are in the UK, please call the National Domestic Violence Helpline at 0808-200-247. So I'd like to begin by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Vanessa. I'm 36, and for anyone that can't tell, I'm British. I'm a mother of three, and I separated from my husband just over a year ago now. And I've got quite a long history. Specifically regarding your subject matter, in terms of I was abused by two separate people as a child. I was raped at 14. I've suffered two other sexual assaults and another rape, which I think we're probably going to talk about in a bit more detail later, because it's more pertains to this season. But sexual assault and sexual abuse is something that I talk about quite regularly. I give sort of local talks actually to survivors and women who've been through it and know what it's like to have to live with it every day. So it's been quite a big part of my life over the last 30 years. Since I first disclosed, I've become much more brave about talking about the topic, and I think now it's something that has become more of a passion to take forward rather than just something I went through and would tell people about. You know, it's much more something I'm active and try and be active in my life about changing. So that's the basics.
So admirable of you to have that strength and courage to speak up and talk about your experiences openly. It sounds like you have endured more horrific events in your life relating to sexual assault and abuse than anyone I've ever spoken to. And I'm so sorry you've had to endure that. And I'm so grateful that you're willing to speak about it in the interests of informing others. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, it takes counselling and it takes hard work personally to get to a place where you can be okay about it, especially when it comes to the childhood things, because it's something that you go through and at the time you don't understand what's happening. So it the way your brain processes it is different. And then when things then reoccur as an adult, it's very easy to feel like you're constantly a victim. If things keep occurring, you think, what is it that I'm doing that's laying me out as a victim? And it's very easy to put that blame onto yourself. So it does take a lot of work and a lot of sort of inward reflection to get to that point, definitely. And I would say to women that haven't reached that point yet that, you know, what, keep working on yourself, you will get there. And there does come a point where you are able to look at it and you are able to see it for what it is. And, you know, I encourage women to do that. It's a very important thing to, you know, really look at it.
Right. Seeing it for what it is and identifying what it is we're talking about, it can be such a nebulous world and a huge challenge for a lot of people. And as you were saying, I understand that guilt and shame are something that a lot of victims experience to various degrees and extremes following an assault. So to get a little more specific, you and I discussed the issue of delayed disclosures because you have some personal knowledge about that.
And yeah.
In the first two episodes of Deliberations, delayed disclosures and women's choices not to disclose sexual assault until a later period or ever have come up. And so I was hoping that you could share with us a little bit about an event that happened to you when you were online dating, and then we can talk about the rest.
Yeah, of course. So after my husband and I separated, I stayed single for a while and eventually sort of dipped my toes, as we shall say, in the waters of online dating, which are hazardous and full of sharks, it turns out. I'd been talking to what seemed like a really nice guy, and we'd been chatting on the site for a while, and then we exchanged numbers. And it became more flirtatious over time. And as these things are wont to do, there was kind of sexting going backwards and forwards and pictures and that kind of thing. And I think these days that's not an unusual thing to happen between adults. And I think it'd been so long since I'd been in the world of dating that I sort of wasn't really clued up about sort of taking safety measures, I suppose, around my own security. So when we agreed to meet for a first date, I agreed to meet him at his home, and it was a block of flats and you had to be buzzed in. So I pressed the buzzer and he buzzed me in, and I went up to his flat, and when he opened the door, he wasn't the person that I'd been speaking to in the pictures. And my initial instinct was to take a step back, and he grabbed my wrist and pulled me into his apartment and quite aggressively raped me vaginally and anally. And I protested verbally. I know enough now that fighting back physically often leads to a much more dangerous situation. And that's not to say that if you feel that you're in a position where fighting back can remove you from the situation, that you shouldn't do that. But I didn't. I was isolated and I didn't feel that there was anyone around that would have been able to help me had I tried to physically resist what was happening rather than just verbally. Yeah, that's exactly how it happened. And it was a very strange thing. Afterwards, he offered me a cup of tea and sat down as if nothing had happened whilst I dressed and sort of chatted to me like normal. And I didn't know how to react. I was stunned and confused, and nothing made sense in my head at that point. I hadn't even had a chance to process anything. And so I just sort of carried on the conversation with him. And then I left after about 20 minutes, and I sort of drove home and got home and thought, oh shit, I've just been raped by somebody I don't know. So that was the actual event itself. That evening I decided I wasn't going to do anything. I didn't have a bath. I didn't have a shower. I didn't know whether I was going to report it. I just didn't feel I could make a decision at that point. And I rang my best friend the next day and asked her to come over, and she took one look at me and said, oh, well, shit, what happened? So I told her what had happened, and she said, you've got to call the police. And I said, I can't. And she said, what do you mean you can't? You've got to, you must, you know the address of this man, you know who he is. And I said, I can't put myself through this. And there's a bit of a backstory to it, where I had been through a court case for one of my childhood abusers, which in the February of the same year, the case was due to take place in the March, and in the February, the Crown Prosecution Service, which is our version of the DA's office, I guess, had decided to drop the case against him, because in my initial disclosure, I'd said that some of the details about what he'd done were hazy in my mind, and they decided that the defence would prey on that to the point where they would say that it was a false memory and that kind of thing. And I just was devastated by that. And I said to my friend, I've sent him all these messages. I have no proof that he isn't who he said he is. He's deleted the pictures that, you know, there was none with his face that I had apart from on kind of instant messaging things. And he's deleted those pictures. And, you know, I've sent him sexually explicit messages myself. Even if I do report and the police believe me, which is perfectly possible, the chances of me it being taken forward into a prosecution are slim, because of the fact that he has that in text message that these are the things that we were going to or planning on doing with each other at some point. And I didn't feel I could drag myself through the process of a physical examination and telling stranger after stranger every intimate, exact detail. And when you report, it's not a case of where I've just like given you a brief summary of what happened, but it's a, you know, then he did this and did he make you do this? And it's so detailed, and it has to be, and I understand that. But I didn't want to do that. I just felt I couldn't relive it. I just felt I needed at that time to just put it in a box and leave it there, because I couldn't face the idea of having to go through the whole process again of detailing and being recorded on video, going through exactly what somebody had done to me. And then reaching the point of a court case and either it being dropped or having to sit in front of a jury of 12 people and have them examine my personal fantasies of that we'd sent over text message and, you know, examine my character in that way. And I felt like I'd be shamed for it. It wasn't something I could do. I just felt like I couldn't bring myself to allow anyone to shame me for it. I knew that I hadn't done something wrong, and I didn't want to make myself feel like I had. And I really felt like under those circumstances, going through the process of reporting would have brought up those questions in a court setting, in a police setting. Well, you went there, you went to his place, you did this, you did that, are you sure, you know? And I just didn't want anyone to say to me, this didn't happen, this wasn't real, you wanted this. And so I decided not to report. And it was a mixed reaction from the people that knew about it, which was a handful of people. My closest friends were very supportive of whatever my decision was. I had some friends who were absolutely furious and telling me it was my fault if other women were going to get raped by him because I hadn't reported, and that I had a responsibility to women around the world to make sure that something was done about this man. And others just called me a liar and said, well, if it really happened, you'd report it.
And that was
very difficult, very difficult, because I mean the friends that had said, you know, well, if you're not reporting, we don't even think it's true. I mean they had never experienced anything like it themselves, so I don't think they could put themselves in my mind frame, and I don't think they could understand, having been through the experience as well as having the court case dropped previously, how difficult that had been for me, because I'd had to go through numerous video interviews about what had been done to me as a child and then nothing had come of it. That the idea of going through that again was just too much for me. And I think that in situations where women choose not to report, that's often the case, that they don't want to relive it. It's not something they they feel they can relive. And often there are circumstances similar to mine where, you know, maybe you have been flirtatious with the person, or that there's been an attraction, you've wanted to maybe at some point have sex with them, but that wasn't the point at which you wanted to do it. I mean, certainly the scenario that you've set up in this season is that kind of scenario. And I could totally understand if she'd decided that she didn't want to report at all. I could totally understand, because you question yourself, and on top of questioning yourself, you think, I don't want other people that I don't know to question me. I don't want to be told that I'm, you know, not being honest. And I listened to the jury break with Jessa, and I think Jessa was extremely sensitive about the way that she would handle it. And I think that she's an extremely ethical lawyer in the way that she approaches things. But that's not true of all defence lawyers. And it's a fear for victims. It's something that's frightening, that especially if you've never been through the process of reporting before, the idea of going into a courtroom and having to explicitly tell a bunch of people you don't know what somebody did to you can be just overwhelmingly terrifying. So I can certainly see why, you know, you would take some time to consider whether you wanted to report it, if you decided to report it at all.
Right. You were in the unique position of having already been through reporting and being in a trial and being scrutinized. And so it was, I think that in your situation, it was a little unique because you were able to anticipate what would happen to you in a much more realistic way than first-time reporters. And I'm very confused and concerned that some of your friends reacted that way to your decision not to come forward.
I think it was hurtful, and they're not my friends. Some of them aren't my friends anymore because of it. I was confused and upset and angry by it. I think I've always thought that women should lift each other up, and that when it comes to things like sexual assault, that it's the decision that each individual makes about how they choose to deal with it and how they choose to approach it. But, you know, I've had it before in terms of my childhood abusers as well. One of them I chose not to pursue a criminal case because there was no other accusers, and I didn't want to be in a he said she said 25 years ago situation. Mm-hmm. And not be believed at the end of it, so I chose not to report that. And a lot of women, when they found that out, who hadn't been through any kind of sexual assault, really would say, well, you know, what if he's abusing another child? You're responsible for that. And I found it, and I do find it to be a very strange attitude that women, and it is often women, have, that somehow as the victim, if you don't report, then you're somehow responsible if he does it again, as if his decision to rape and his decision to assault you has any bearing at all on you, has any you know, relevance to you. I hope he doesn't assault anyone else, but it isn't my responsibility to make sure that he doesn't.
Correct.
I can't be responsible for all the women of the world. I can't take that responsibility on my shoulders, and survivors of sexual assault and sexual abuse can't do that. It's too much to bear.
I think you're right. It's not your responsibility to make sure he doesn't do it again, and it wasn't your responsibility to have prevented your own rape by, as you said, naively going to his house.
No, and I came to terms with that, and I certainly don't feel like, you know, I did something wrong now. I think perhaps I was naive, and I'm much more, if I go on dates now, much more conscious of that. But I hadn't dated anybody for 13 years. I'd been married for 13 years. And
even if you had, even if you were a seasoned dater, going to a person's house should not be viewed by anyone with suspicion as though you were expecting sex. I've heard that kind of argument. Like, well, what did she expect if she went back to his house? And that one really sticks in my craw.
It's very much of the, well, what did you expect? You were dressed this way, or what did you expect? You were drunk. What did you, what did you think was going to happen if you got in a car with someone you didn't know that well when you weren't, when you were dressed for going out and you weren't, and you'd been drinking, and, what message did you think you were going to give him? Well, whatever message he thought I was going to give him, he deliberately deceived me anyway. And the message I gave him as it was happening was a very clear no. So, sometimes women aren't even able to vocalize no during the assault because you can leave your body. I mean, your brain can literally detach from what's happening to you, mm-hmm. especially with childhood abuse. And you freeze and you don't know what to do. So you just almost think, I'm just going to let this happen and get this over with and get out of here. And people think that in some way that makes it somehow because you didn't express a verbal non-consent that means it was consensual. But we're humans, we read verbal and we read non-verbal cues from each other all the time. And I don't believe that most men aren't able to read non-verbal cues of a woman who is uncomfortable in a sexual situation. Right. I think that's a fallacy, and I think it's a process of victim blaming, and it's an argument that sort of predators use to excuse their behaviour. Well, she didn't say no. And it's not acceptable. And I do get very cross. I do get very frustrated when I think that there are women who are not advocates of other women. I think we have to be each other's warriors. We have to be each other's fighters. We have to be each other's voice. When the Me Too came to campaign was at its height, I remember thinking that there are so many women that have not said Me Too, but who have experienced Me Too. And all of us who are brave enough to have said it, we have to be their voice too. And we have to fight for their rights and their experience. And we have to be able to say to them that we're with you and we stand with you. And if you don't want to be seen and if you don't want your story to be told, that's fine. But we recognize that you have a story, and we recognize that someone hurt you, and we want you to know that that's not okay. And I think it saddens me that there are women in the world who don't see it like that, and who almost take the side of men in the situation of, well, what did you expect, or what did you think was going to happen if you turned up at his house? Or it actually got round. I live on a very sort of small estate, and it actually unfortunately got round the estate, and there was an old lady over the road who'd seen me that evening as I was going out, and this is not a first-hand account, this is hearsay, but apparently she'd said, well, seeing how she was dressed, I'm not really surprised at all.
Oh, my God.
And, it hits you like a punch in the stomach, because you think, I should be able to walk into a room naked and nobody should still be allowed to touch me without my permission, Mm-hmm. It's my body, it's my personal space. Just, I should be able to walk into a room full of men completely naked and not expect to be raped. Like, wow. there isn't a situation where that's okay. And I think, and I mean, that's partly a generational thing maybe, but certainly with my friends that were my age who said that they didn't think it was true if I wasn't going to report it, what it was very, very difficult for me. I found it, I just, the victim blaming element of it and the sort of shaming me or trying to shame me into doing something I didn't want to do was just, it was almost like a reliving of being forced to do something else I didn't want to do, you know? It was a crazy thing to me to have said to somebody. I just can't imagine ever saying that to somebody who comes to me and says I've been assaulted. I can't imagine ever thinking it, let alone saying it to them. And it was a horrible thing to go through. So
I'm so sorry. You know, I know you chose not to come forward because you were trying to escape scrutiny, and so then to have experienced that in your own circle in which you were supposed to feel safe must have been so much more traumatic than you could have anticipated.
Yeah, it was definitely. And I mean, it was easier in some ways because I didn't have to give the level of detail that I would have had to have given had I chosen to disclose. I wouldn't have had to, I didn't have to go and undergo medical examinations, et cetera, which are, I mean, most women don't like smear tests, but a post-assault medical is far more uncomfortable and far more intrusive when you've just been intruded by somebody else than it's possible for somebody who hasn't experienced it to imagine. So, you know, all these factors play into your decision-making process as you're deciding whether or not you want to take something forward. And I think where I'd experienced so many different sexual assaults, I think I just drew a line in my head and said, this is not something I want to pursue. This is not something I feel strong enough right now to deal with. This is not something I feel mentally is going to be healthy for me to deal with. And I have some other health problems going on. And I really felt like it would affect those health problems. And I just knew that it wasn't the right thing for me to do, for me, to disclose it. And I haven't regretted the decision at all, not for one second. And it's been, I've had some more counselling about it and I've been able to work through it fairly quickly, which, you know, is good. And I have spoken about it at other sort of speaking events to other women. And I think, you know, I try always to turn things like that into a positive, and it taught me that I am stronger than I thought I was. You know, I didn't think I'd be able to endure another thing. And I was, I did. And I came out the other side and I continued to endure. And that is a positive for me. And it takes away the power that the negative of the situation itself has over you when you're able to reclaim that power and make it into something positive for yourself. It's metamorphosizing. It changes how you view the situation. And that's what's positive for me. That's what works for me, is taking back my power and taking it and saying, actually, you took something from me, but I'm going to take what you took and I'm going to turn it into something beautiful. And that's how I've always tried to approach things. And that's what, how it works for me. And, you know, all women find their own path through it, but that's been my path, certainly.
Wow. That's a really admirable path. And I was actually planning to ask you if you had any pearls of wisdom for any unfortunate women listening who might find themselves in similar circumstances. It sounds like you've worked through some issues with therapy and speaking to other women. Are those coping mechanisms that you found to have been helpful?
Absolutely. Definitely speaking to other women. Look for local support groups, or there'll be, I'm sure that you're able to sort of post somewhere local or international support lines. I'm sure that that's something you could post on the website somewhere if people are looking for help. Absolutely. But my biggest thing that I would say to women that are going through or have been through something is that you are not alone, and that there is always someone out there who will listen to you, and always someone out there who will support you whatever your decision, and that you there is no wrong decision. That when something happens to you, when you experience a trauma, whether it be whether you're in a terrible car crash, or whether you go through a sexual trauma, or whether you go through cancer, or whatever the trauma is, there is people to talk to, but also there is healing to be found at the end of it. It's not a black tunnel that never ends. There is always healing to be found, and realizing that you have power and that you can take that power back is a really, really strong message that I really encourage women to think about how they can take the power back for themselves in their lives, what that means, what that looks like. And it's a long process for some, and it can take years to be able to even look at what happened to you, really look at it. But once you do, it can be transformative. And I just would say to women to just take the first step. You know, it's very much a step-by-step process, and it's an individual process. But taking the first step is the hardest step. And often that's telling someone, whether it's a friend or a helpline that's anonymous, or whoever it is that you choose to talk to. I would just encourage you to talk to somebody. Don't keep it to yourself, and don't blame yourself, because there is no blame for you. It doesn't matter what you did, or how you behaved, or what situation you put yourself in. Nobody has a right to touch you without your permission. Nobody has a right to violate you. Nobody has a right to invade your space. Nobody has a right to demean you and diminish you. And if you feel like you are at fault or in some way to blame for what happened to you, taking that first step of speaking to somebody else who may have been through it, or who's trained to talk about it, it really starts you on the journey of learning that it's not your fault, and there is light, and there is hope, and there is real change at the end. And that's really all I have to sort of offer in terms of wisdom.
That's a lot of wisdom, and so valuable. Sincerely,
well, I hope
someone
so
who's been through it, I know that's going to speak to a lot of people.
I hope so. I would certainly be happy if any of your listeners wanted to speak to me personally, if they contact you, then, and they wanted to have a conversation with me. I'll speak to you about it, but I'd be happy for you to pass my details on to any listeners that want to talk about it with me, if they've been through something and they want to share it or talk about it with somebody else that's been through it. I would certainly offer that.
Wow, that is such a generous offer. Thank you. So to anyone listening, please remember that Vanessa, that's a really extremely kind offer. Thank you.
You're more than welcome. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak out about it. It's, you know, we've spoken about how passionate I am about it. And I feel honoured to have been given the opportunity to speak to women and speak to men as well who've been assaulted through your podcast. And I hope that even if just one person feels like they can make a step in the right direction of changing how they feel about the situation, about themselves, then I think I feel really pleased that I've done something good. So thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thanks to Vanessa for her really brave and insightful contribution. The more comfortable we are sharing experiences like this, the faster we'll experience social change. If anyone listening wants to talk to someone about their own lives, please call the National Assault Telephone Hotline at 800-656-HOPE. This is an American number. If you are in the UK, please call the National Domestic Violence Helpline at 0808-2000-247. If you live somewhere else, I strongly recommend finding your national helpline and giving it a call. You don't need to be in the immediacy of a dangerous situation. You could just need clarity or someone to talk to about what's happened to you. If anyone would like to be put in contact with Vanessa, as she so generously offered, please email me at deliberationspod@gmail.com and I will pass along your information. Thanks again, Vanessa, for sharing such a difficult story. In 2 days, we're dropping episode 3 of Deliberations, in which we find out the results of Riley Page's rape kit. Thanks, and we'll see you in 2 days.